I'm reading from Luke chapter 15, 11 through 24. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far away, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. And then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." Amen.
Amen. Coming home. Well, welcome. Welcome home to God's grace today. Good morning. How are you all doing? How are you all doing? All right, good. I'm just making sure you're awake here today. How many people, if you've had this experience, probably, or I know I have this experience as a pastor. I'll go to like these meetings or conferences or events, and there'll be like a speaker, or there'll be I'll be in a meeting with some other pastors or whatever, and then there's like a break because it's an all-day meeting or half-day meeting, and then there's a break in between the meeting. And so immediately at break time, everybody leaves the meeting space and goes and gets on their cell phones. Have you ever seen that happen? Like, you know, as soon as there's a break, oh, I've got to get on my cell phone. You know, it's urgent, and there's got to be something. And for pastors, sometimes there are very urgent messages we have to attend to, but I also wonder sometimes if we're just trying to look important, you know, or to look like we're busy, you know, like the boss is coming, everybody, you know, you're having a conversation in the hallway, and all of a sudden the boss is coming down the hallway, and somebody says, "Hey, the boss is coming." Everybody starts to act like they were doing something. I wonder if the cell phone's the new version of that, you know, like, oh, let's look busy, let's look important, let's look at that. Or the folks that kind of wear the Bluetooth thing in their ear the whole day, you know, even in the meeting, they got the Bluetooth thing in there because, you know, and you're thinking, why, you know? Is it maybe because our cell phone has become now the symbol of looking busy or looking important? We can't even drive our cars 15 minutes without getting on our cell phones, you know. And so this cell phone, this thing has just begun to take over our lives in some ways. And it's just another example of how modern society is actually making us busier, more attentive to and things that seem to be urgent all the time, which really aren't urgent. And we get trapped into this modern thought that I've got to be busy, I've got to be important, I've got to be accessible. And so I get consumed by this, and I think about this as modern society. I start to think about, what's that doing to, because as a spiritual pastor, as a pastor and a spiritual person, I start to think, what is this doing to my soul? What is this doing to this other part of me that really is important? In fact, the other part of me that's really eternal. That cell phone one day will be gone, but my spirit lives on. My soul is eternal. The cell phone will be replaced in probably 2 years when the new iPhone 8 comes out. So we kind of get trapped into the physical world that we live in, the material world we live in, and we can do it at the neglect of the spirit and the soul. So this series is really about being dirt poor. Not physically, not financially, but spiritually, dirt poor. And I wonder if we as a modern society are dirt poor when it comes to our spirit and our soul. Think about this. God created us as whole people, body, mind, spirit. But how much of our daily life is focused on the body? And how much of our daily life is focused on the mind, comparatively to how much of our time and investment is in the soul, in the spirit of who God created us to be? So if you think about that, a lot of our body, we pay a lot of attention. We invest a lot in our body. We have 3 meals a day plus snacks, in my case. We consume food, nourishment, drinks, those types of things. So where our body, we go to the gym to make up for the three snacks, the 3 meals and snacks, you know, and then we go. So we invest a lot in our body. We sleep. Those are all things that invest in our body. Our mind, we get up and we spend our minds engaged in work and purpose, and we may read a lot or may read the news or read the newspaper or get on social media. A lot of that is stimulating of the mind. So we spend a lot of time focusing on the mind and focusing on the body in daily life. How much do we really invest in our spirits? And could it be that we sit here today in worship because we really know that we're dirt poor spiritually? That we know we're impoverished when it comes to our souls? Maybe that's what's going on. And part of our impoverishment is that we've bought in to a definition of the good life that maybe isn't a biblical definition or Jesus' definition of the good life. So when I say the word good life, if I say I'm living the good life, what do we typically think of when we think of the good life? How is my life? You know, if I walk up to you, how are you doing? And say, oh, I got it good, right? What does that mean? Or I'm blessed. What does that mean? You're not in debt, right? Right? You got a car, you got a house, you're not in debt. Great example. You know, I've got all these things, right? I'm living the good life. What else? Family, I've got family, I've got relationships, healthy, I've got my health, salvation, yeah, you're getting ahead of me there, but I'll go with you, all right? Or what about comfort? You know, don't I feel blessed or feel like I'm living the good life when I'm comfortable, when things are going my way, when God opens up that parking space at Target, you know, like that's what God's all about, you know, I don't know. That's exactly what God had on the agenda today, to open up the parking space at Target for you. You know, so we kind of start to think that these conveniences of life, you know, these comforts of life are blessings or the good life. But notice that they have to do with my physical comfort, my mental comfort, my own peace of mind. And so I will pursue happiness or the good life. And a lot of us, if we're honest with ourselves, we are living the good life here. Vast majority of us, even those of us who don't make a lot of money, we're living the good life comparatively to the rest of the world. So that's part of the equation, right? We define the good life or that God has blessed us. We start to look at it materially and comfort and convenience. You know, I got my Keurig at home. I got my cup of coffee. It's convenient. I get the convenience. Life is good. Isn't that what we say on our coffee mugs and our t-shirts? So isn't that what we mean? Then, because we're pursuing the good life, we also are doing all these great things are happening to us. So then we think, you know, I want to do good for other people, which is actually a Christian value. We want to do good in the world. We want to serve the world. But there can become a place where our living the good life and doing good makes us neglect our own spirits. Stay with me here for a second. That I'm living the good life, so I'm going to go do some good in the world so that I can feel better about living the good life. Let me give you an example from Matt's life. So I go and I see a shirt that I want to buy because it's going to make me look good on Sunday morning. And I want to buy this shirt, and it costs more money than I normally spend, but I'm going to go ahead and justify my expense of buying that new item, that material item, and then I'm going to justify it by going and giving some clothes to the Goodwill. Some of my leftover clothes, some of my clothes I never wear anymore, some of my clothes I really don't care about. But I'm going to do good to justify my good life. Or go a little bit further with this. Or as a parent, I may work so hard. My whole life may be consumed with providing for my family, with consuming, creating this good life for my family, that I neglect my relationship to my family in my pursuit of giving them the good life. And because then I feel like I haven't invested enough in relationship, I go buy extravagant gifts for my kids to make up for the loss of relationship. So I'm doing good for them to make up for the good life that I'm pursuing. Or to go even a little bit darker, a little bit clearer, it's like the gambling industry giving a charitable donation to Gamblers Anonymous. PR work, right? What I'm suggesting is that our doing good in the world could be a PR job for our desire to pursue the good life. That these two are in entrapment. And then we begin to define the good life this way. And I see this even in the church. I see this even in Christianity. We begin to define the good life as living the good life plus doing good equals God's blessing. I'm blessed, right? If I have the good life and I'm doing good for others, I consider myself blessed. And in some ways, that's true. The problem with that definition of God's blessing is it can create the sense that I don't need God. And I don't need God's grace. I don't need God's love, because you can do all that without God. You can do all that and neglect your spirit at the same time. You can do all that and feed your mental and your physical and be blessed mentally and physically and be dying spiritually. Your soul could be shriveling up as you pursue the blessed life. It's possible. It is possible. I actually kind of woke up to this idea when I was reading a book. Some other guys were reading a book called Accidental Saints, which is a book about how God uses messed up ordinary people to do God's work. And it's messy sometimes the way God works. Read the Bible. It's a good example. But there's this messiness to the way that God works in the world. And one of the quotes, and again, if you read this book, I will warn you, this pastor swears. It's a swearing pastor, and she swears when she writes, so just be aware of that. But I'm not going to share any swearing in this moment, but I'm going to share you a quote. She talks about the scandal of the gospel, and this is what Pastor Boltz-Weber says. She says, "It looks like the same crappy mess that bumps us out of our unconscious addiction to being good, so that we can look at Jesus as he approaches us on the street and says, 'Man, you look like you could use a good meal.'" What struck me about that quote was that we can be addicted to being good, our unconscious addiction to it, to doing good and being good. Because it makes me, who does it make feel better? Me, right? And I can get addicted to that, even as a Christian. And so then I can never see my own spiritual poverty or my own need for God's grace. I don't ever see myself being in a position where Jesus comes to me and says, "Man, you could use a good meal," because I'm physically not hungry. Mentally, I'm not hungry. But what Jesus is talking about is, are you spiritually hungry? Jesus didn't offer just a physical meal. Jesus offered the bread of life, a spiritual meal. And you and I could be very spiritually hungry and not even know it, because we think we're blessed and we're doing good. Because really, what does our society also tell us? Don't be needy. Don't be the one in need. You be the person who meets other people's needs. Don't be needy. And so we think that if we see ourselves as needing God's grace, that's a demotion. Like that's beneath us. Would you like to know how Jesus defined the blessed life? You may not want to know. He started off in the Sermon on the Mount with this verse. The very first verse in that sermon was this: "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." What I always like and don't like about Jesus is that he takes the way we define things in the world and he flips them around. And that's exactly what he does here, doesn't he? He says, if you want to be blessed, be poor in spirit. No, recognize your spiritual poverty and you will find the kingdom of heaven. He also goes on and said, blessed are those who mourn, who are in grief, who are lonely, who are at loss, who are persecuted, who are pure of heart, who are seeking peace and to make peace with other people. Those are the blessings. Those are the blessed ones. And none of it has to do with our physical life or our mental life. It has to do with our spiritual lives. That we're blessed when we're poor in spirit. You may have come this morning not knowing that. That's okay. You may have come this morning knowing very well that you need spiritual life given to you. Maybe that's why you came. So that's why we read the Gospel of Luke this morning. Because I want you to notice that in this story of the prodigal son, where does God's blessing show up in his life? Where does God show up in his life in this story? I want to first of all tell you where God doesn't show up. God does not show up in the prodigal's life the moment he gets all the money. Did you notice that? He goes to dad, "Dad, give me my inheritance." He gets a whole ton of cash. He gets a lot of money at this point. And so he's wealthy. Now he could have, if you had walked up to him and he had just gotten rich and you would have said, "Hey, how you doing?" He might have even said to you, "I'm blessed. I got all this money. Look at how God has blessed me with all this wealth." But that's not where God's working. That's not where God's showing up. The next thing that happens is he says, "I'm going to get my own place. I'm going to get my independence from dad. I'm going to go live on my own. I'm going to buy this really nice place to live in, and I'm going to have all the toys and all the things, and I'm going to buy this great because I got the money now to do it, and I can gain my independence." And if you had walked into his new house or new apartment and said, "How you doing?" he might have said, "Hey, I'm blessed. Look at this great place I've got." But that's not where God's working. That's not where God's blessing. Then he goes and he starts to have lots of friends because now he's got money. He's got a great place. He's throwing great parties. Friends are coming to him. They're loving him. He's not lonely. He's got the blessing of friends. He thinks he's got it good. Physically, yeah. Maybe mentally, yeah. By our definition. But spiritually, he's dirt poor. I also want you to notice that God doesn't show up when his friends leave. When the money runs out. You know, the money probably ran out. And I wonder if he prayed. I mean, I wonder if he prayed and said, "God, I'm out of money. Please bless me with some more money." And God didn't answer the prayer. God didn't show up and give him more money. I wonder if he actually prayed and said, "God, you know, I'm lonely. Give me some friends. All my friends have left me." And God doesn't answer that prayer either. And then he needs a job. I wonder how many jobs did he reject that may have even been offered to him before he took the job feeding pigs because he got that desperate. I mean, how many times, "Well, I can't really do that. Oh, well, I can't really." And then finally he finds himself so destitute that he has to take this job. How often did he pray that God would give him a good job? And God didn't show up or answer that prayer. It's only When does God show up in this story? When does God begin to work in his life in this story? It says, verse 17, but when he came to himself, when he came to himself, another translation says, when he came to his senses. So let's walk through this physically, spiritually, and mentally. Physically, where is he at physically in this moment when he comes to himself, he comes to his senses? He's dirt poor spiritually, but where is he physically in the story? He's in a pig pen, right? So let's walk through the five senses of the pig pen. Because he comes to his senses, and I think this means physically too. So what does it smell like in the pig pen? Yeah, not good. What does it look like in the pig pen? It's a mess. It's dirty. It's nasty looking. It's wet. It's muddy. It's slippery. What does it feel like? Touch. Slimy. Dirty, gritty. What does it taste like? How many people have ever mucked a stall, right? Have you ever tasted the air in a barn? Have you ever been shoveling something and you're shoveling it up and stuff's flying into your face and into your mouth? There's a taste to this. Did I get smell? Smell, taste, touch, sight. Oh, what does it sound like in the pig pen? It's not music, is it? It's not a heavenly choir. It's not any of those things. It's guttural, it's noisy, it's disturbing. It will give you nightmares, right? So think about that. He was coming to his senses physically. But notice he's also coming to his senses mentally, because in this moment, he's starting to think, you know, it's better as a servant in my dad's house than here. He's starting to problem solve again. He's starting to think with his prefrontal cortex again, not just with his physical neediness that was driving him to that dissolute living. He's now beginning to wake up mentally, coming to his senses and thinking it through. But I think it's also at this moment when it says he came to himself, that who is the self? It is me, my soul. He came to his soul. He came to his spirit. He came to see who he really was, who God had really made him to be. He came to himself, mentally, physically, spiritually, whole person, came to himself. And that's the moment God shows up. That's the moment he begins his journey back to what Jesus defined the blessed life as, the kingdom of heaven. Notice that when he gets home, what is his experience when he gets home? He's got this whole speech. Dad doesn't care about the speech. Dad doesn't care why he's come home. He's just glad he's there. He just throws his arms wide open. He says, I've never stopped loving you. You know, you've been out there in the world trying to prove yourself, trying to gain your worth, trying to find who will love you, and the one person who has loved you all along, has been here all along, you finally come home to. God is the one that will love us unconditionally, will value us unconditionally, will accept us unconditionally, that sees us worth more than anybody else in this world could ever see us. So why do we keep trying to prove ourselves? Why do we keep trying to earn our worth and prove our importance in this world when we already have a God who loves us and says, you are worth every single moment. You are worth so much that I gave my son for you. Why? Why are we dirt poor? And just know that God, it's in our poverty, in our spiritual poverty, and recognizing it, that God begins to bless us with the kingdom of heaven, with love and grace and unconditional worth. Amen.